Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with estate and tax planning attorney Paul Grant. How you do there, Paul?
I'm well. Hi, Mark.
Good to see you once again. Hey, this
Thank
week,
you.
Getting back to basics a little bit, that word we hear a lot, probate.
I know.
How to avoid probate, perhaps.
Yeah, if I was a singer, I could put dun-dun-dun-dun at the end of that, right? But since I can't sing a tune, we'll just pretend that didn't happen right now.
Okay.
So, yes, probate.
What is probate?
Well, really, probate is the aspect of if someone passes away, we need to get legal authority over the decedent to someone else so that they can act on the decedent's behalf. And so really, if I were to pass away, we have things that are titled in my name, things that I was supposed to take care of that I didn't. Maybe I have a credit card that I haven't paid off. Maybe I had medical bills because I was in the hospital before I passed away. Hopefully, I have some bank accounts or other assets, a home. All of these things may have my name on it. And now that I've passed away, it's really, really hard for me to sign my name.
Yes, it is.
And so, therefore, who then can take up that position and who can represent me to actually close out these accounts? And that's really the basis of probate, which is who's entitled to get what's left over and who has the authority to act on someone's behalf after they've passed away.
So the whole thing of probate happens regardless of whether you have a will or a trust or not.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
still the process that happens.
Well, very good question. The process itself of how we close an estate needs to happen, but probate is specifically the discussion of I need to go to court and I need court intervention to actually empower and or to sort out what's going to happen with my assets. So so the answer to your question directly is no.
Okay.
Not everyone needs probate.
Yeah, because I didn't. My aunt, I was the executor in her estate, and she had a living trust.
Right.
I never had to go to any court.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And there's one of the major differences is kind of how do we get to probate is, well, if we use a will, there's a high probability that we're going to need to go to probate because I've said on my shows many times, a will is a check writing instrument. Mm-hmm. It just simply says, have my stuff go here. And there's no backup authority on an account. So therefore, a trust, however, is a holding container to where the assets are in the name of the trust. Well, the trust never died. Mm. I just did. I'm the one who had control and authority over the assets. But since the trust never died, we can have someone who's called a successor trustee
right.
slip in under behind me and take over the assets. And now all of the management administration can be handled outside of the purview of the court because the trust is a separate entity. It never died. Just the one who had the authority over it did. So there's one of the big differences really between a will authority versus a trust authority, which is that a will oftentimes, now not 100% of the time either, so I want to be really, I want to give a whole picture and not a probate is bad picture. I want to educate in this discussion, which is that not every will needs to go to probate. Now, by Washington law, every will must be given to the probate court within 45 days after someone passes away. Okay, so now, even if you have a trust, you also have a will. The will needs to be presented to the court, but we may never need to actually open up the legal process of empowering somebody to manage that will. So, but with a will only and not a trust, so if we just have a last testament and will, chances are, and usually a pretty high probability, we're going to need to utilize the probate system and actually open up a court case and get someone empowered to manage the assets and manage and have authority over closing credit cards and other things authorized by the court itself.
Yeah. Yeah, I had that scenario for me. My aunt had a living trust, but my mom had a will, and the will was with her attorney.
Yeah,
and he started moving through all those things. And,
exactly. So a will, because it's a check writing instrument, typically will lead us to a court process. Now, how can we stay away from that and still use a will? Well, we can make sure that all of our beneficiary designations are on account. So if we have a checking account, make sure beneficiary designations are there. If we have an investment account, make sure beneficiary designations, an IRA, same thing. Even now, as of 2 years ago, Washington State allows a beneficiary deed. So I can recreate a deed that says, my children get my real property equally or however you want when I die. So now we even have a non-probate way, a non-court way to transfer real property. Hmm. And as of 2 years ago, that was not the case. Hmm. So this is kind of one of the last little places where oftentimes we had to open up a probate with a will because someone just owned property. Now, I can almost guarantee you that the percentages are really, really high that most people still own their property, their real property, their home, in their name, and they have not transferred it to a beneficiary deed because it's just too new. Mm. And most people, they don't go to an attorney for 10, 15, and 20 years or more sometimes before they have their estate plan re-looked at. So their chances are that even though this new tool is out, very, very few people have taken advantage of it.
Just the last couple of years that came out.
Yeah, just 2 years ago. Okay. And so, therefore, there are ways that we can stay out of probate, but a high amount of individuals actually have their estate plan marching towards the probate system. Well, maybe that's not the worst thing in the world, right? But most probate, back in the 90s, there were a lot of seminars that attorneys would do, and they would actually call it the three evils of probate. And so the three evils of probate are that probate takes too long, it costs too much, and it's a fully public process. Now, all of those things are actually true. Okay. So it's just that one of the designs of that language or that philosophy back in the 90s was that it was coupled with a very, very low estate tax exemption on the federal level. So if someone had more than $600,000, a really disadvantaged tax would start. Mm. Well, heck, you can barely buy a house now for under $600,000.
Right, right.
And now the federal limit is over $11 million per person versus $600,000 per person. So the lingo of why we utilize trusts have changed. But back in the 90s, that was really one of the big mantras or advertising schemes, the three evils of probate. Well, like I said, those still exist. And I just want to take a moment to walk through each one of those individually.
Okay, takes too long.
Yeah, so an average probate, at least in my research on a national level, takes an average of about 13 months.
Hmm.
And so many probates are open for a year or longer. I've had probates opened for 3 years or longer.
Hmm.
Now, that particular probate had some very, very unique issues and events that caused the death that would have kept this open for such a long period of time. But even as an attorney, by the way the law is designed in Washington State, then I really can't even close one faster than 6 months. As a matter of fact, I think the fastest one I've closed is between 6 and 7 months. And I like to think I know what I'm doing and how to close a probate. So therefore, really, an average individual can expect between 9 and 12 months if it's a very clean, straightforward probate process. And during that time, then, we may have heirs who need assistance. We may have minors who need to be taken care of. And all of these things, then, every time that we need to go to the court to start saying, well, we know that the process isn't done, but can we utilize the money for this? all of a sudden now, the next part of that three-part evil is that why does it cost so much? Now we're starting to see that we may need to utilize the court or get permissions from the court. That is not always the case. We have what's called a non-intervention process. That means, court, don't intervene with me unless I ask you to. Okay? Mm-hmm. But sometimes there are legal issues that we want the court to say, yeah, you're okay to be doing that. And if anyone in the family, if other siblings, if other individuals come out of the woodwork, start raising a little bit of a stink, I know that that would never happen with families right. out there, then we're really starting to potentially get a little skittish on just saying, well, we've got the authority to do this. So oftentimes, I wouldn't say often. Let me recorrect that word there, because I don't want to give a false perception. It wouldn't be often, and I don't know the percentages, but I would say under 50% of the time, I actually have to go back to the court to get direction or some other approval. A majority of the time, so over 50% of the time, we're actually able to use that non-intervention power, and that actually does really help keep the cost lower. But the average cost still, even in Washington State, and Washington State is a really cost-friendly probate process, still we can anticipate and we warn clients that it's still going to be about 2% of your gross estate. So if you have $1 million, that's going to be a $20,000 anticipated closing process. If you have half of that, right, $500,000, 2% is still $10,000. So the cost perspective in Washington, not as big of a deal, or it's not as high as other places, like in specifically California or Florida. They actually have statutes that give what's called a reasonable test, and attorney fees can be anywhere from $5,000 to $100,000. So you think you want to avoid probate in those states? Oh, my goodness. Yeah,
God bless my aunt, for she was in California, and she got the living trust, and we avoided all of that.
Yeah, that's right. And in California, there's still a real strong stay away from probate purpose to use trust. Most of them are just really simplistic. They're really not designed for family legacy purposes or even really to protect individuals thereafter, like I actually create, but they are intended for, let's stay out of probate, make sure the property is there, make sure the accounts are in there. And if that's all it does, it actually saved quite a bit of money for the estate. Yeah. And so those are a couple of the issues of probate, but we're going to lead into a break here, and we'll get back to the rest of them here as we come back in.
Okay, always interesting information with Paul Grant. What is probate this week? The subject on the Legacy and Faith Show. If people are listening and they have questions, they want you to take a look at their estate, how do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, go to our website, legacyandfaith.com. We have podcasts of past shows there. We have educational seminars that are coming up. There's a way to communicate, ask questions, and communicate with the firm itself. So head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. Hosea 4:6 says, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." God's people need to be fully prepared in managing their finances and ensuring that their wealth is properly transferred. It is our passion to bring this knowledge to the body of Christ. If your church would benefit from having a financial and estate session that is biblically based, then I encourage you to reach out to us so that we can help design and implement a specific and strategic session for your church. Or if you are interested in estate planning services, then I likewise encourage you to reach out to us. You can go to legacyandfaith.com and receive all the information you need. Again, go to legacyandfaith.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Co-host Mark Holland along with Paul Grant this week talking about probate. And just before the break, you were getting into the three evils of probate. Takes too long, costs too much. And we were kind of moving into the, it is a public process. And if you're a private person, you don't really like that, but that is part of what it is.
Yeah, and our courts are designed to be, for integrity's sake, an open forum. So we don't like the back alley deals. So we don't want our courts operating with that type of a attitude or that type of a flavor. There's only a few times when, as a society, we really go, yeah, that's a good reason not to. Sometimes when we deal with minor children, we want to redact and make sure minor children are better protected. We can think of things such as sexual assault cases or other things that may really have a long lingering effect on somebody's name that we would want to protect. So there are certainly few times when the court system is designed and wants to really protect someone's identity, and they're usually very understandable times when we would want the court to do that.
Well, but the downside then, though, of the public is this, the public process. People, you always hear of all these strange things people had in their will. It comes out in the paper. They left $100,000 to their dog.
Right.
Is that because of this public aspect of the process?
Yeah, typically it can be. So the public process is that if I start a petition, so it's a court process. So I have to come to the court with a standard petition. So to open up a probate, the petition by the statute needs to give us the name, date of death of the one who passed away, where their residency was. And then we also have to tell the court of whether or not the estate is solvent. And by Washington law, that means if you have $100,000 or more. And so therefore, we have to proclaim that we actually have assets in excess of $100,000. In addition, we also need to name, according to statute, the individuals who would be entitled to notice, and specifically, they're called heirs and the children. So we have to give the names. The statute says their age. Usually we protect that by saying that they're over 18 years old and the court accepts that. So I don't have to really get your age. So it was either that or your weight. But so we went with age and we want to protect it. And then we also have to give an address of the heirs. So that's a lot of information.
Yeah.
So now, because it's a public process, people can actually go to the court. It's online.
Right.
And you can go through the different probates and you can find out who died, whether they have more than $100,000, how many heirs there are, and where they live and what their age is. So let me ask you, is that something that you want the public to know about your family after you've passed away? And so it's a public process is still part of the deal, and it's because of the way the courts are designed, which is actually a really good thing. And so I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that there's other alternative ways to create the family privacy that we desire. And of course, that means that we have to utilize a trust instrument versus a will instrument, because a will is going to, most of the time, drive us into a public process to start a petition with all of that information on it. So it's very amazing to me, by the way, is that when I help clients close a probate, close an estate, can you imagine how many pieces of junk mail my law office receives of, hey, if you need help with heir searches for this estate, and it comes with, I'm just going to use the name Smith for kind of generic purposes. The estate of Smith, that's what how it comes to my law office. How do they know? Because they're watching.
Right.
Because they are actually combing through the public records to find who has passed away to offer their services. So if you think that that's really not a big deal or, well, who really does that? I'm telling you they do.
Yes.
and because I get the junk mail in my law office all the time. And so so unfortunately, it's the way that the court system works, which, again, I advocate. We want an open public process because we like integrity. But in this case, when we start shifting money all around, now I start having concerns. And so
you want to protect your family.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And so then a will oftentimes driving down the road into the probate realm, I think oftentimes would not meet the intent and desire of the one who is creating an estate plan. So here, let me say this, because I almost say it every single show, which is that unless you are proactive with your estate plan, this is the road that you'll go. Because if you don't take control, someone else will take control for you, meaning the law will. And you are at the submission, and your kids are at the submission, or your family, or your heirs, whoever it may or may not be, they're at the submission of the court system. And that's typically not where people want to be. Let me also kind of correct this one fallacy that I often hear, which is, well, I don't want the government to have it. Okay, unless you are an only child, have no parents, and have no relatives, the state is not going to take your money. Okay,
but that is almost what happened with Paul Allen. You know, a recent example. I mean, he left a $25 billion plus estate. I'm sure it's all well planned for, but he has no heir. He has just a sister, I guess.
Yeah, a sister. And so I'm hoping, because we do hear other people, Prince, Aretha Franklin, the list could go on.
Who had no will.
Who have amassed this amazing yeah. thing and still haven't taken responsibility. And we look at that and go, well, how couldn't they? Well, because we tend to be all human, regardless of how much money we have. Mm. And that's the other thing, is that taking control of your estate plan is not about how much you have. Let's not get confused with estate plan means I have a bunch of money. Estate plan is far more. It means that we are taking control of our lifetime. Number one, who is your financial power of attorney in case you can't take care of yourself? Who's going to take direction or give direction from a doctor with what procedures, medications, and other things that you may need if you ever experience a disability or incapacitation and can't actually communicate with doctors? How about your end of life discussion? Do you want to remain on life support if there's no hope of recovery? These documents are the critical part, and I would even say more critical, and that's estate planning. Estate planning is not that, well, I only have, you know, $50,000 in a checking account, and that's all the money I have in my life. That's fine, but I can tell you multiple stories of someone having $100,000, having no will, and the court mandating that we give that over to their only child who's a drug addict. Mm. And so the issue is not the money or the amount of money. The issue is, do we want to take control of our estate plan and exert our rights over our own life to start with? And then number two, ensure that the process when we do pass away is one that we agree with. Now, I'm going to give a little bit of a preview right here, which is that what I just said, taking control of our life, I believe is a biblical mandate. And so the next week's show, I'm going to talk about our biblical mandate to exert authority, to exert God's authority over our life so that he can work through us. And our estate plan is no different. And so therefore, be sure to tune in next week with that discussion.
Okay.
But if we don't have a plan, we are simply turning it over to the law, which is intended to create a base level for everyone to play at, and really may not match. As a matter of fact, I'm almost positive that anyone who has not created a will that I have ever closed, there are things that are going on in that family that the person wish they would have taken control of, but they just never did. They never took control of their estate plan. So we can stay away from probate. We get to probate by using a will, by having assets in our own name with no beneficiary, because we need someone else to be empowered by the court to represent us when we've passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that legal transfer of authority from myself, if I die, to whoever the court empowers. If I have a will, I've named them. But if I don't, then it kind of goes by a pecking order that the law tells us. we will get somebody in charge of the probate, but it may not be the right person or the person that you would have chosen. So therefore, we get to probate by having assets in our name. We get to probate by using a will or by not doing anything at all versus taking control of our estate, taking control and making sure we're taken care of, and we can use other tools to really make the vision of what someone has come to pass. So I'm not so sure that the three evils of probate aren't still an appropriate discussion point. It's just that the terminology and the discussions of why trusts are useful have changed. And of course, we have other podcasts that talk about trusts and their power. You can find all of those things at legacyandfaith.com. And so all of our past podcasts of the differences between wills and trusts and helping design critical features of an estate plan are all there. Plus, you can get a hold of us. We run educational programs, and we'd love to meet you and hear what your questions are and have that opportunity to serve you.
So if people have questions, again, go to legacyandfaith.com, legacyandfaith.com. Always great information with Paul Grant, estate and tax planning attorney. And this has been another rousing edition of the Legacy and Faith Show here on KCIS.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.